Deck the halls and Merry Christmas, listeners, to Decades From Home, a festive podcast about Germany. I'm Lord of Christmas, Nick Houghton of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by jolly co-host Kat and snug Christmas onesie-wearing producer Simon Josie to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Merry Christmas, Kat. Merry Christmas, Simon.
Merry Christmas, Nick.
Merry Christmas, Nick.
Now, before you listeners work it out by our conversation, this is being recorded slightly earlier than Christmas. It's not on the 24th or the 25th for that matter. We're currently recording this on the 15th of December. So bear that in mind when we talk about how full we are from, I don't know, Christmas turkey. I don't know how many of us actually eat turkey. I'm not eating turkey. What's everyone eating for Christmas dinner, folks?
I'm planning on getting some duck.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, just a small amount, because if you cook it really well, you don't need a huge amount of duck.
Do you usually make duck?
I've done it the last 2 years in a row, yeah. And then I was thinking about a carrot cake as well.
Ooh, carrot cake for dessert.
I know it's not very Christmassy, but Germans don't really do Christmas cake at all, do they, huh?
Stollen, I guess, but that's an argument. Is that a bread or is that a cake, I guess?
It's not a cake.
It's not a bread either. It's some liminal space between the two.
It's a loaf.
It's a loaf, definitely a loaf of something. What's the dessert? Tiramisu? Is that the dessert option?
Pavlova.
Is it always pavlova?
Yes.
I don't think I've ever had a pavlova.
It's a classic.
But you don't get like a fruity, stodgy Christmas cake.
Oh, trifle is pretty popular these days as well. It wasn't when I lived there, but trifle for Christmas dinner. Mm-hmm. But a pav as well.
You're not having the pavlova, but you're having the carrot cake. Are you having a pavlova then, Simon? Are you doing the traditional?
Damn right we are. Well, we better. Actually, my wife made a pavlova yesterday for a friend's son's birthday, and I didn't even get to try any of it because it was cooked and taken away. And that's pretty unkind to, you know, way to treat a New Zealander. Just saying.
Can I tell a story about pavlova?
You can always tell a story about pavlova.
I had a friend visiting me from New Zealand when I was living in Germany, and we made like a pavlova together. But by the time it was like done, it was quite late and it was still kind of warm. And you know how pavlova tastes better when it's cold. So we were like, okay, we'll just have like a little tiny bit and leave the rest in the fridge for tomorrow morning. Then we have pav for breakfast. Wake up the next morning and my understandably now ex-husband had eaten the rest of it because he thought that that was the portion left over for him.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You got to check on these things, surely. The leftovers.
Do you have to put notes on the pavlova? I don't know. I've never had to put a pavlova. It was like, it's so small. I'm like, how big do you expect it to be, you know?
Well, this being the first Christmas with legal weed, I'm going to have to be doubly careful when it comes to the leftovers.
That's a pivot.
Like, is it legit if I steal the food out of the fridge because I had the munchies?
It wasn't my fault.
It wasn't my fault. I was chemically induced.
No, you don't get a free pass because of that.
Kat's inscrutable face there, just like, still not an excuse. Don't eat my pav.
My mum always used to make a fabulous Christmas cake, and it would like live in the freezer for 12 months, and then she'd bring it out and cover it in marzipan icing, which was it was just amazing, but talk about rich. And then she'd make a Christmas dessert as well, Christmas pudding, I think it was called, with a hard sauce, which had quite a bit of, I don't know, sherry or some sort of
brandy, alcohol usually.
In it. Brandy, was it? Okay, yeah. But no one else liked it, but she liked it.
When Kat was talking about there not being really a German Christmas dessert, I hadn't really thought about the fact that there wasn't one. And I started doing some sneaky Googling in the background. And it's just reminded me how much Germans love a dessert that you can make in a glass. Like, can you make some kind of layered dessert in a glass ramekin or some kind of nice glass beaker? Because there's a lot of them here. A lot of options. A lot of sort of panna cotta-based dessert choices, but nothing I would sort of put a finger on and go, oh, that's specifically Christmassy.
Or cake.
Yeah, there's lots of mousses and stuff like that, but not a lot of kind of, yeah, the Stodge just seems to be a British / New Zealand extension, I guess. I'm sorry we gave you that element of our culture and not all the other bits.
But I mean, in Germany, you're too busy eating other things. Like, what are those enormous things? They kind of look like chocolate brezel.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Oh, I can't remember what they're called.
Are they the biscuity bun things, the biscuity things?
Yeah, they're kind of biscuity. And there's so many other delicious, delicious German Christmas biscuits. My favorite are the Zimtsterne. You can't go past a good Zimtsterne.
Oh. They are pretty massive, like the Plätzchen are free-flowing at the moment.
So I feel for that reason in Germany, you really don't need the cake because you're eating sweet food continuously throughout the month of December.
Mm-hmm. I've been avoiding sugar as well for so long, and then Christmas sort of crept up on me, and my office neighbours have been, this seems to be quite a German tradition, get a knock at the door and someone will just come in shaking a tin of Plätzchen, like homemade Christmas biscuits in your face. And you're like, I know I've got a diet, but they look amazing. And went into the kitchen, I think it was last week, just making some coffee. And there was a plate of like the most amazing, like professionally decorated biscuits that I'd seen. Every type. Zimtsterne, and they had like these sandwich things that were, I'd never seen them before. Those Dreieck, like mini Dreieck kind of biscuits, the little triangular ones. This is lovely. And I scrammed a load of them. And then someone was like, oh, they're the secretary who made them. And so there was like a queue of people waiting at the secretary to knock on the door. Like it was literally like a queue of people knocking, saying, oh, did you make the biscuits? They're delicious. And then saying, thanks very much. And then closing. And then the next person would knock on the door and go, did you make the biscuits? They were really delicious. So it was like waiting in this queue. So yeah, I've probably added a few pounds that I really shouldn't have done. But
Nick, you asked what we were having for Christmas, what we were expecting to have Christmas. What about you? What do you have, turkey or do you have ham or do you have something else?
Well, we're doing ham this year because the roast beef wasn't well received. When did we have it? 2 years ago. I think 2 years ago it wasn't well received, sadly. So we're moving on to the next best thing, which is a Christmas ham. So I'm doing one of those and I'm still making Yorkshire puddings because God damn it, I still want Yorkshire puddings. And just all the sides, basically. I was thinking, do you know, I was listening to something. I've been listening to that podcast Dish, where is it Nick Grimshaw and Angela? I forget the name of the chef that does it. And they interview celebrities. And they were talking about why is it that certain American side dishes at Thanksgiving haven't become more popular in Britain. And one of the things they were talking about was sweet potato covered in marshmallows. And I was like... So you know what? I'd like to make that. I'd like to see if I could make it because they were sort of talking about how you make it right. And I was like, you know, I think we're poo-pooing the idea a bit too early, you know? I think
that
it
sounds
might be
like
good.
A TikTok craze. Where's my Dubai chocolate?
Kat, I was thinking of you when I made this bet with my mate, right? And I said, how long before Dubai chocolate crapfin are on sale? And I was like, I reckon February is when we start seeing Dubai chocolate crapfin.
My friend had a Dubai croissant at a bakery in Germany this week.
It's happening. We're going through the transition phase. It's a slow transition to crapfin that'll be released when fashion arrives.
It's on its way. We're already in pastry territory.
That 10 euros is definitely mine. I can see it landing in my pocket soon. But yeah, I think something like that would be quite nice. Not the Dubai crapfin, but the marshmallows on sweet potatoes. It's worth the experiment, right? I mean, what's the worst that happens? You get some like diabetes inducing side dish.
I just can't imagine that the texture would be good. Can you please try it out, Nick?
I think I might be the only one eating it, so I might try like a single portion and see if I can just make it. My thought is, would it be better if you sort of slightly fried the sweet potato so it was a bit crispy and then you put the marshmallows on it?
Not sure if oil is going to really help you there, but what does the recipe tell you to do? Do you mash it?
I think you meant to kind of mash it and or smash it up a little bit.
Together?
No, you basically bake the sweet potato and then you put the marshmallows on top. I believe that's the recipe I was looking at.
Do you melt the marshmallows to some extent? Yeah.
I think I might even have to get a blowtorch to make it crisp up the tops a little bit.
I hate to bring up old wounds and stuff, but I mean, at least with cheese and Stollen, you've got sort of conflict of tastes there with sweet potato or kumaro, as we like to call them in New Zealand, and marshmallows. It's sort of putting something sickly sweet on something that's already sweet. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a little bit hat on a hat, but at the same time, my cheese and Stollen crusade was featured in The Local last week. So
I saw that.
Friend of the podcast, Rachel Loxton, who's been on, featured one of my tweets about cheese and Stollen in the 10 food and drink treats you should try at a German Christmas market. I was very proud. It's the proudest I've been of anything.
That is very funny because I don't think you'll find that at a Christmas market, right?
I think it was basically just saying that you would never find this. This guy's an idiot. And I was like, yes.
Maybe you need to go into business and set up a stall.
I know. I think I'd make out like a bandit. I'd do quite well.
Just imagine, as heard on the Decades From Home podcast, I can see the branding already.
Then you can spend all your time at the Christmas market.
I mean, it's not that I want to spend all my time at the Christmas market. It's like gravity. I like step 1 foot out of my house and then a split second later, I find myself around like twinkling lights with a glue vine in my hand. And I don't know how I got there. It's like a fugue state. What's happening? Where did this case of Kreiner come from? What is going on?
It's not till that hot splatter of cheese hits your cheek that you kind of realize where you are.
It shakes me out of my coma, and I'm suddenly like, what? As long as I've got a scarf and a sensible pair of shoes, those are the things. Oh, I tell you, thermals, man, that changes the game. That extends your Christmas market evening by at least an hour for a set of thermals.
Well, you know what Germans say, you know, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing.
It's true. They're bloody right, you know. I know we occasionally lambast them for their incorrectness, but Germany really knows what they're on about when it comes to cold weather.
But that means that basically any complaint about the weather is a failure on your own part.
That's the German way, though, isn't it? Like, it's not the weather's fault that you're an idiot. It's not the traffic's fault that you're bad at driving.
And yet people still complain about the weather here.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a paradox.
But isn't it usually the inconvenience of the weather rather than the weather just being bad? Because that's the British thing, isn't it? The weather's just bad. And that's what you're complaining about. Whereas it's the fact that the weather's made you late or you've had to shuffle snow out of the driveway or something like that. Do you not find?
I think you might be onto something there. I have to think about it a little bit more.
Because I always find that people just don't like the weather because the trains are late, which is fair enough because the trains are very late.
Oh, there was some pretty diabolical train action going on in the middle of summer, though, as well. I don't think that's restricted to any particular season.
No. It's leaves on the line, sun on the line, it's cold. It's slightly windy today.
And one of the things that I'm wishing for 2025 is that the Deutsche Bahn improves, but...
I feel like at this point, you know, we should like change our way of thinking and take pride in the fact that our trains are so shit and then like get angry about the fact that they're making them better. I think that's how Germany's going to deal with the improvements to the rail network. It's like, oh, do you remember in the old days when you'd get a train ticket and your train would just be cancelled 5 minutes before it was meant to arrive? I miss those days.
Do you think there'll be a World War II level of deep shame about the downfall of Deutsche Bahn?
I don't think so, no. I think Germans are just annoyed. They're just like, they don't even take shame. It's like, it's not a sense of pride. It's just like utter disgust. And like, I was on the train the other day and I was swearing about the fact that the trains were so shit on the phone. And you could see people looking and laughing because they were just like, could hear me just going, it's like, well, they're fucking so shit. Why can't they just run a train on time? Every train is late. And just people are like giggling in their seats.
Were you speaking in English?
Yeah, I was in English. I think the people enjoy it. Germans love it when they understand English and then they hear an English person just losing their shit. I've noticed that because I do have a tendency. I'll be on a phone call and I'll forget that I'm in public and I will just lose my shit about Deutsche Bahn or something else. And I usually look up and they're just someone's just laughing in my face, laughing at my anger.
But it's more than just a mild convenience. I mean, like, if you have to be somewhere early in the morning, you then have to go the day before just to make sure you're going to be there on time, you know? And, like, I think when I'm flying long haul out of Frankfurt, oh, I'm going to have to plan for way early, leaving Cologne way earlier than I used to. Yeah, it ends up costing way more time. That's one thing, but also money. Like, it's an extra night somewhere, potentially.
Actually, the last time I flew internationally, I had to train down to Frankfurt, and I was freaking out. I was sitting there with my wife going, okay, this time my flight, and we were trying to do the maths to figure out at what point do we abandon me getting on the train and we drive straight to the airport, you know, hour and a half away, because we just weren't sure that the train was going to arrive and get me to the airport on time. The point of no return passed, and it's like, okay, it's Deutsche Bahn or nothing now. So, yeah, it suddenly became very real that actually you can't rely on the train service at the moment.
Yeah. I was thinking we've got guests coming to stay that we're trying to work out, because the numbers don't equate to the vehicles that we have. We're like, oh, well, if we can't borrow a car, don't really want to rent one. And then we're talking about it, and I was like, well, why don't you take half of them in the car and I'll take the rest on the train? And then I was like, I don't trust that there'd be a train. I don't trust the trains to be running, and that they won't just cause like absolute havoc, and it would just cause a complete breakdown of the trip. What I have noticed certainly is if you're traveling to somewhere central, like, so because of where I am in Augsburg, Munich's down the road, getting to Munich from Augsburg, piss easy. Getting Munich to Augsburg is like a trauma. It's like Munich to Nuremberg, piss easy. Augsburg to Nuremberg, absolute trauma. And it always seems to be the same. It's like if you're going between two major places, there's more chance that it won't be bad, but there's still a chance. Whereas if you're in the sticks or something, you're totally hammered. You're just going to have a bad time, pretty much.
I believe a number of the disruptions at the moment are because they're actually doing work on the lines, which, I mean, trying to put a positive spin on things. But one thing that really bothers me about Germany is just how slow certain things are. Like, one of the bridges across from Bonn to the other side, across the Rhine River, they've been working on that bridge since I came to Germany in August 2020, and it's still nowhere near finished. And I'm just like thinking, what are you doing? Why do things like that take so long in Germany? Is this just my own little personal hell?
Yeah, especially in comparison to like the Dutch, who like whip up a new bridge in a day.
Oh, really?
I can't speak for the Dutch, although I suspect their efficiency has got to be better than Germany's. But it's something I've heard before. Like, I've seen a few kind of influencer types on Instagram with a similar like refrain. The obvious example, and I'm sure listeners are screaming at their phones or whatever devices they're listening to the podcast through, about Stuttgart 21, which has been going on for like, it's the never-ending story of the train station that will eventually be finished at some point when no one knows. Or airports, you can talk about the airports in Berlin that have been a total fucking disaster. But I found like street repairs and stuff generally around here happens quite quickly, quite efficiently. I mean, yeah, it's an inconvenience when they close roads and things like that, but they've been doing stuff around the university, and they've been pretty sharp about getting things open again. And I can't speak for like major infrastructure work, but I do know what you mean, though. There is the little things that you see, and you're like, when are they going to finish that? Is that ever going to open, you know? But I think sometimes, it very much depends where you are and who's in control of it, because sometimes you see stuff and it goes real quick, and then in other places it just seems to pad out. Could be, don't want to say the obvious, but it's probably fucking paperwork, isn't it? There's probably some document 21, paragraph 6, you know, that someone hasn't read, or a box that hasn't been ticked. That's always my suspicion anyway. Maybe I'm just a cynic. So Simon, you were talking last year about your big Advent party in your street, where every day, like the Advent calendar, one member of the street would host a little party. And I'm wondering if you've been doing something similar.
Thank goodness, no. Because I put on so much weight over that period, and I didn't even eat or drink that much, and I certainly didn't go to every event, but every night of the Advent calendar, there was a house party in my street, and I was fearing the same thing, you know, happening again this Advent, and thankfully it did not. But we do have a party coming up next Sunday as we record this. So we're going to have 2 hours. So, I mean, there's only so many calories you can consume in 2 hours, and it's going to be outside. So it's not going to be inside. It's going to be in the street. So hopefully there'll be calories lost because of all the heating that you're having to do because you're outside. So yeah, this is me, you know, trying to convince myself it's not a bad thing.
That's the most optimistic take.
Yeah, it's a big change in tradition to go from like a 5-day or how many, I don't know how many houses are on your street, but to go from this multi-day event and packing this down into a thing that was 2 hours long. And
yep.
Do you think that something was specially set that off last year that was particularly hard for everybody? Or
well, someone came up with a concept at our summer street party, and it was, the weather wasn't great, and we all sort of stuck in this garage. And I mean, there's quite a few houses in the street. You know, it's a very sort of, how would you describe our street, Nick? It's sort of very middle class kind of suburban German street, isn't it?
Do you know what? It's not the fairest of comparisons, but the vibe I got from the street that Simon lives in was Ferris Bueller's mate's house in Ferris Bueller.
That's pop culture that I'm not familiar with. But tell me, is it a cul-de-sac?
Have you never seen Ferris Bueller Cut?
It's not stayed in my mind. No,
oh my God.
That stuff just is like water off a duck's back.
Okay. Impervious to culture.
It's got one of those signs which says that it's, you know, those blue signs with the white kids kicking the ball, you know, there's that special type of designated road in Germany, mm-hmm. where you have to watch out for kids playing. I can't remember the name of it, but it's one of those streets. So it's a very family friendly
kids zone.
Yeah, it's I mean, it wouldn't look out of place in New Zealand. Well, it probably would look out of place in New Zealand because we don't live that in such dense housing in New Zealand. But yeah, it's certainly very, I would say, middle class, comfortable, well-to-do street without being ostentatious, I would say. But there are enough houses that for the Advent calendar period, one house could host a party each night of the Advent calendar. So it wasn't just 4 or 5. It was a lot of, I mean, it was what's that?
24? Are we talking 12 days of Christmas, but 24?
Yep. At least every night for the whole Advent calendar.
Wow. And they did that last year.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that it was during the summer party, about halfway through the summer party, some of the residents came up with this idea, hey, let's do this next year. And oh, we'll just, or at Christmas time, let's just have this casual sort of thing and no big deal. But actually everyone put on a really, apart from us, we just did, you know, we did some mince pies and some other stuff. We were, you know, in the spirit of we thought it was a fairly low-key thing, but a lot of people put on really fancy do's. And I think, I'm just guessing, though I didn't hear anyone say it directly, that everyone maybe was of the same mind of me, as like, it's just too much. It's like a month of partying is just too much.
Mm-hmm.
Can't
so
deal
it
with
only
it.
Actually happened for 1 year.
It was a one-off, yeah.
That's amazing that you were there to experience that.
it was pretty cool because it was, you know, I got to see, you know, I went to a lot of people's houses that I've never met before and met some people who I thought were not very friendly. They turned out to be really friendly, so that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I can wave and talk to basically all my neighbours or anyone in the street who I met through the party. I didn't meet everyone because not everyone went to every party, but I met a lot of people that I hadn't met before, which was pretty cool.
Well, there you go, listeners. If you're new to Germany and you're not sure how to strike up good relationships with your neighbours, just drop something in everybody's letterbox and invite the whole street for a party that's a month long.
What a commitment. Do you want to party with me for a month? Oh, dear. I mean, again, though, it would hopefully foster good relations. We've done something similar by us, but it's not we've not got as many neighbours as Simon in this luxurious suburban hideaway.
A whole advent calendar full of neighbours. Wow.
I think we've only got five. What we do have, we have five sort of households that we've invited to sing Christmas carols at our house on Friday. And we've done it every couple of years, but we've usually done it outside. But there's the people are getting older and it's kind of nice to be inside in the warm. But there's drama. That's what we have. We only have five households, but we have 24 households worth of drama. There's been a falling out in the street between two of the retired couples that live right next door to each other, apparently stemming from some kind of building work that led one of the neighbours to call the other neighbour a nosy cow, which I laughed at and then realised I shouldn't have been laughing during that conversation. It was quite funny. I just think the idea of calling someone a coo is quite funny. Anyway, and so...
It feels pretty cute in German, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Doesn't have the same impact as cow, but yeah. Anyway, and once I realised I stifled my laughter into a cough. And I think no one was the wiser. But yeah, so there's been drama because we invited everyone. And then we were told, oh, can you uninvite these people? And I'm like, geez, we're not uninviting anyone. Right. We're not getting involved in your beef. Like... It's like, can't we just be British about this and just not talk about it?
That's pretty hard when you invite everybody in the street except for one couple.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, out of principle, both couples should not be invited.
Oh, that is a spicy take. And I would like that too, because it would mean there's more Lebkuchen for me after the festivities.
No wonder they made you Lord of Christmas.
Well, it's that's the kind of festive cheer that I bring to the party. It's like, don't invite people so I can have more. I'm pretty sure that's the meaning of Christmas, right? That's what they were talking about in the Bible. It's like, make sure you've got as much as humanly possible.
No, Christmas is all about getting presents from a baby.
Oh, right. Yes, of course, the magic Jesus baby that flies through the sky.
I wanted to talk about that more, about just the, it just struck to me after our last conversation about it, that the fact that a baby is giving the presents is so unrealistic. How can the baby go shopping and get presents? Just been born.
I mean, I feel like bad, Megan, because I'm going through this at the moment with my daughter, where like opinions about the Christkind and Santa Claus are still quite soft and the knowledge is still lacking in part. So... we're still trying to contend with all the questions of the logic behind it. And every time she asks us about the Christkind, I'm a little bit too flippant because I'm just like, it's just so ridiculous, right?
Don't you spoil it, Nick.
No, I'm making very sure. I'm not trying to kill a childhood. Don't worry. I'm not that guy. But the current conversation we're having is she asked us today, she was like, someone said St. Nicholas and they meant Santa Claus, but St. Nicholas isn't Santa Claus, is he, Daddy? And I was like, no, St. Nicholas and Santa Claus and Father Christmas and the Vinax Man are all the same person. And she was like, no, they're not.
No, you can't say that, because St. Nicholas comes on the 5th, or is it the 6th?
But I mean, we've got to contend with the fact that I read The Night Before Christmas to her on Christmas Eve every year, and he's directly referred to as Old St. Nick in that.
Take this from another foreign parent with those two cultures. You need both of them. You have to have both of them.
Well, what I'm trying to explain is that there's those obvious connections, you know? So, like, she's going to ask questions if because she's heard Santa Claus referred to as St. Nicholas before. And so she now thinks St. Nicholas and the Niklaus are different people, which is already confusing enough as it is. But then we add the layer of Santa Claus and the Vinax Man also being different people. So currently she's under the impression that there's like 66 different weird men involved in giving a Christmas present. So all I'm trying to do is make that system a bit more efficient by combining the concept that they might all just be the same person, but from different angles.
No wonder she's asking questions about the Christkind and you're refusing to answer them. Oh my God, this kid.
I mean, what are we going to say? She's like, Daddy, does the baby Jesus bring me presents on Christmas? And what am I going to do with that information? Just be like, that's painfully ridiculous. Now, have you heard about this other imaginary man?
Okay, I've got to agree with you that we can just take for granted here. The Weihnachtsmann, Father Christmas, and Santa Claus are all the same person. And St. Nicholas is his own thing.
But it's not, though, because it's St. Nicholas and Santa Claus are the same person, like in the tradition of Santa Claus.
Of Coca-Cola.
No. I mean, you go back and do the read about it. It's where it sort of stems from. You have like the Weihnachtsmann, which is kind of like the green man and the kind of pagan element. But it all sort of merges together in this 18th, 19th century. And yeah, Coca-Cola made them red. But I mean, that's all right, isn't it? Those pictures of Santa Claus on the Coca-Cola cans was quite good. It's quite good art. Quite liked it.
So I understand why you're having problems discussing this with your child.
I mean, there's a lot of layers of tradition you've got to penetrate in order to explain all of this stuff. Luckily, she's only four, so you just keep everything in the air. Eventually, they'll come down. The edifice in which I'm creating will collapse upon me. But that's the point where she realizes that Santa Claus isn't real. So what we're hoping, like 8, 9, I don't know. I'm not going to be involved in it. But
all you need to do is tell her that Santa Claus will keep coming as long as you believe in him. And when you don't believe in him anymore, it's over.
Don't stress, because as long as the gifts keep coming, she'll let it go. She'll be gentle on you.
I'd imagine so. I think I'll be fine. I mean, like, the kindergarten doesn't help. We've only just, like, shaken the fact that for about a month this year, she believed that baby Jesus brought babies down to Earth, thanks to a conversation she had at the kindergarten, which we had to navigate very carefully. So we release her off to the kindergarten every day, and she comes back with mad shit, and then we're like, oh, God, we're going to unpack that. So, yeah, it's like trying to juggle while someone's throwing darts at you.
Just relax a little bit. We sent our boys, when they were very young, to the best school on option in Manila, and it was quite a God-bothery school. And at one time, my wife would refer to our eldest son as the zealot, but he grew out of it.
Yeah. Baby Jesus does get a lot of reference at the moment. She was quite disappointed. We went to the Christmas market today, and she wanted to see the nativity that they have in the Augsburg Christmas market, and it was pretty poor show. Not that I'm a connoisseur of the old nativity, but you know, I know what I like, and I didn't like this, and so she was disappointed. And we went into the church. It was so funny. We went to this church, and we just happened to go into the church that was like the most modern church you'd ever seen. There was nothing. There was no nativity or anything. So she was quite disappointed. She's like, when am I going to see baby Jesus? I'm like, God, ask your teachers. They've probably got a spare one. Someone knocking about the place.
You just have to tell her there is no baby because it was born 2,000 years ago.
So I'm not meant to destroy her beliefs around the various entities that may or may not be bringing a presence, but destroying her religious values was perfectly fine.
No, that's legit. It's legit. But because, I mean, even the Christians, it's not like the belief that Jesus comes back every year, right?
Depends which Christians. There's a lot of different types. I mean, there's definitely a group of them who are like, he's coming back. Just find that cave.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the Easter story, not the Christmas story. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
I know, but yeah, still. Oh, but saying that, you say getting ahead of yourselves. My siblings, my delightful siblings, the collection of them, sent me a photo, and it is the apex of overlap between different festivities. And it was just a simple photo of two shelves in a supermarket. On the top shelf were mince pies for Christmas, and on the bottom shelf were hot cross buns. We've reached it. The merge point between Easter and Christmas has arrived, and it is apparently the middle of December.
Funny you should say that, because I was out doing the dog walk 2 mornings ago, and there's this one place where he always does his number two. And
you saw the Easter bunny.
Well, no, I didn't see the Easter bunny, but I saw a hot cross bun lying on the grass.
What?
And initially, I didn't make anything. And then I thought, hold on, what's going on here? That's a hot cross bun.
I don't believe it. They don't have hot cross buns in Germany. I have to make my own.
Dude, this was a hot cross bun lying on the grass.
You're talking about a Rosinbrötchen, yeah? But it didn't have the cross on it.
It had a cross on it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a hot cross bun.
I find this very hard to believe.
I think Simon, I can't believe you just didn't follow the trail of hot cross buns and found the secret lair of the Easter Bunny. That's obviously what was happening, mate.
Well, if I didn't have the dog with me, I might have done some more serious investigation.
I mean, you want the dog, that you never know if that Easter Bunny's got a knife.
Next time, bring it back home. We can take a look.
I'm going to take a photo next time. That's for sure. Doubters.
I just find that so hard to believe because, honestly, I've scoured the Kaufland year after year. I've been to the Etika. I've looked through the Lidl. No Christmas assortment ever has them.
Hot cross buns?
Yeah, I make them, but it's not like an easy thing. It's like more complicated than a cake or muffins or something because it's more of a bread kind of thing. And you need every spice in the spice rack.
You can get away with not making them without all spice. And I find the reason I like them more than making cakes is there's more reliability with making stuff with dough, like yeast dough. And all it's a matter of doing is making the dough, letting it sit, making them into balls, letting it sit a bit more. And it's just constant proofing. And it's time intensive, but it isn't like a lot work intensive, I would say, in the way a cake is.
I would disagree. And like, it's been a long time since I've made bread regularly, but it was all in the kneading.
Hi, but knead for 10 minutes and you'd be fine, man.
I'll tell you what, Nick, you make some, you send some to me and some to Simon, and then we'll give you some feedback.
Yeah.
Good. Happy to. I can't promise there won't be slightly stale because remember, we are dealing with German infrastructure again. We're adding that to the equation. So when they get to you in sort of August.
Nothing that a good dollop of butter wouldn't sort out.
Oh, man. I miss a good hot cross bun.
Oh, I think I'm going to make some hot cross buns now. Happy Christmas, everyone.
I didn't realize there was a thing in England. I thought they were just like a New Zealand, Australia thing.
Oh, come on. Where do you think they originated? It's us. It's always us, you know. Hot cross buns, monarchy, slavery, that kind of shit. That's us. The British way, down to a T.
Oh, in that case, I might be able to order some from here, huh?
I would have thought so. You should definitely be able to order some from the UK to Germany. This cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, I'll just get a box or something.
Because I ordered two jars of mince for mince pies, and that was a tenner for jars that were probably in Britain would be less than that. And then you've got, I think it was 15 euros all in for two jars.
Where'd you order those from, Nick? Because I think Tina got, my wife, she got some off Amazon.com.
Yeah, so that's exactly where I went to. It's the only place I could find it with any reliability. There's British shops, but because of Brexit, there's no guarantees on when you'll get it. You might find it a bit easier with, I don't know, fresh bread products, but perhaps not. Can't say. But there's obviously different rules and different stipulations for different things that are exporting.
It's really hard though now. Like, I play netball and we're part of like Netball Europe and they're based in the UK. And then I was like, I'd go to their website and see if they've got any cool merch. And I went over there and had some really cool sports socks with like Netball Europe on them. And I just thought they would look just fine. But when I got to the shopping cart, I could not purchase the items in Germany. I looked at a list of lands that they could export to, and it was New Zealand, Australia, Africa, America. But yeah, Europe was just not possible.
Yeah. I found even just getting deliveries and stuff like that can just be a proper trauma, depending on which delivery service you get. Like it was another firm, UPS, that was it. And then I had to like hunt for the place where the stuff had been delivered. And there was only like one outlet and it was like 40 minutes away because there just wasn't an outlet for that particular company where I was. And it's just like getting anything delivered is just... a trauma.
Was it from the UK?
Yeah, it was from the UK.
I just feel like with the UK, they really need the money. Yeah, they should make it easier for like me to buy their socks. I will happily spend money on netball socks.
Ah, okay, netball socks, right? Yeah, okay, I get you.
I might be buying other things as well, like the rule book. I've got my eye on that rule book as well. To have it in laminated version.
That's when you know you're a profi. When you've got a laminated rule book.
Somehow the fact that it's unavailable makes it even more attractive to me.
It's the it, what is it? The scarcity theory. Is that what it is?
The grass is always greener.
But you don't play netball on grass, though. I mean, that's the.
This is true.
That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to give each other festive nicknames. How about, I don't know, Kat, Simon Knight? Is that one, maybe? Or for you, maybe we wish you a Merry Catmas? Now, if only there was a good festive nickname for Nicholas. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. Retweet us, share a link, or post with the hashtag DecadesFromHome or lowercase on Twitter. As ever, if you have any questions or feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, you can tweet Dillion at DillionTheAlgama, Kat at DBestimmerin, and you can tweet me at 40% German. You can also get us on the Instagram at 40% German, which is moderated by Kat. So go over there and say hi. You can also get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%German.com. Weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss!
Tschüss!
Tschüss! Weihnachtliche Tschüss!
Frohe Weihnachten!